He spanks me several times, forcing me to balance on my elbows so I don't topple over sideways. Then he fondles my exposed pussy, pinching and stroking it as my stinging ass throbs with heat. He groans.
You're so wet, baby. God, you're so fucking wet. It's all over your thighs. My pretty little slut is so ready for me.
His voice is gruff and exultant, filled with lust and triumph. He sounds as if he's hanging on the last thread of restraint, and as soon as he lets go of it, an animal he normally keeps tightly bound will be unleashed. I'm about to be devoured, and we both know it. Head hanging down and eyes closed, I moan. Through gritted teeth, Aiden orders.
Beg me to fuck you now, Kayla.
I whisper. Please, master. Please fuck me. I hear the sound of a zipper being torn open. Then the crown of Aiden's hard cock nudges my entrance. He grabs me by my waist and shoves his erection deep inside me. When I cry out in pleasure, he starts to thrust his hips, driving into me over and over again. Aiden! Aiden!
Tell me you're mine.
Yes, I'm yours.
Tell me you love my cock.
I love it. My cries echo off the trees. He reaches under me and palms one of my swinging breasts, squeezing it roughly, then pulling on the nipple. It feels so good, I moan again.
Dirty little bunny,
he growls hotly.
You can't get enough of your master's hard cock. You want my cum too, don't you, dirty girl? You need your master to fill you up until you're dripping with it.
My arms give out. I fall forward. My cheek scrapes the damp ground as Aiden fucks me from behind, fully clothed and in control of every part of me. His laugh is dark and pleased.
Yes, good girl. You take it like a sweet little cum slut should. Look at that plump pink pussy, stuffed with her master's fat cock. I'm stretching your pussy wide open, aren't I, bunny?
When I moan again, shuddering and sweating and very close to orgasm, Aiden chuckles.
Maybe my dirty bunny needs her other hot little holes filled too.
He shoves his thumb into my ass. When I cry out, he leans over and thrusts his other thumb into my open mouth. Then he continues to fuck me, bent over and riding me hard from behind as I suck desperately on his thumb and jerk my hips back to meet every one of his thrusts.
Time to take your master's cum,
he pants, his tone urgent.
But I want those eyes on me.
He withdraws and throws me onto my back, panting, my heart racing. I stare up at him as he looms over me, his engorged cock jutting from his jeans, his chest heaving, his dark eyes burning like fire. Spreading my thighs, he falls on top of me. He fists his dick in his hand and finds my wet center, then forces it inside me with a grunt. When I moan and grab onto his jacket, he grasps my wrists and pins my arms to the ground. He starts to fuck me again, hovering over me as he holds me to the earth and stares into my eyes. I beg brokenly, please, oh please, master, please, may I come? His eyelids flutter. He whispers my name, but he doesn't give me permission to let go. My pussy and clit throb with every thrust of his hips. My back arches from the ground. My nipples ache so badly it's painful. My lids slide shut, and I whimper. Aiden releases my wrists and grips my head in his hands.
Look at me,
he orders. I stare up into his burning eyes as a white hot coil of pleasure winds tighter and tighter in my core, and my thighs start to shake uncontrollably.
You ready, baby?
He whispers, the motion of his hips growing frantic. Unable to speak, I merely nod.
Eyes on me when you come. Don't look away. I want you to give it to me looking right into my eyes.
After another few thrusts, he snarls.
Now.
I suck in a breath and grind wildly against him. My climax hits hard, and I moan but don't look away. I stare wide-eyed up at him as my pussy contracts over and over around the huge, invading length of his cock buried deep inside me.
Oh, fuck, Kayla.
He breathes.
Jesus fucking Christ, here I come.
His entire body jerks. Deep inside, I feel his dick throb. Then he's moaning and thrusting shallowly as he spills himself into me, staring straight into my eyes. The intimacy is so intense and overpowering, I lose my breath. My chest feels as if it's being crushed by an invisible force. He feels it too. I can tell because his eyes fill with anguish. He says my name on a strangled breath, then gives me a desperate, devouring kiss. All the way through it, we both keep our eyes open. 27. We lie entangled on the forest floor, breathing hard but otherwise silent. Then he groans and drops his face to my neck, hiding his eyes. Staring up at the endless blue sky, I wrap my arms around his shoulders, knowing instinctively that this time, he's the one falling apart. "It's okay," I whisper hoarsely, dazed. "Aiden, it's okay." He makes a muffled sound of pain. "Shh." I softly kiss the side of his face and thread my fingers into his hair. He's heavy and hot on top of me, trembling all over, and all at once, I'm flooded with a deep sense of peace. Or all maybe, or something else altogether. I'm not sure there's a word for it. Whatever it is, it's beautiful. My lips close to his ear, I whisper, "I loved it. I loved every second, everything you did and said. Do you hear me? This is what I needed." He exhales a ragged moan. "My beautiful lion. You're so wonderful. You're exactly what I need." He lifts his head and kisses me passionately, moaning into my mouth.
"Kayla,"
he says, panting.
"God, fuck. Did I hurt you? Are you okay?"
I chuckle. Aside from some scrapes and bruises, "I'm excellent." His gaze darts all over my face, searching for any sign that I'm lying. When he seems satisfied I'm not, he swallows and moistens his lips. He says haltingly,
"I got a little carried away."
"Did you ever?" I reply with a grin. "Holy cannoli, what a smutty vocabulary you have. It's even better than your normal one." After a beat, he starts to laugh. Softly shaking his head, he laughs in relief, then kisses me again.
"I can't help it. You bring out the beast in me."
"Apparently. But now I would very much appreciate it if we could stand up. There's a rock digging into my lower back, and it's unholy painful."
"Shit, sorry."
He withdraws, stands, tucks himself back into his jeans and zips them up. Then he helps me stand, handling me carefully as he brushes earth and leaves from my skin.
"You're all scraped up,"
he says in a hushed voice, wincing as he dusts me off with feather-soft strokes of his fingers.
"Your knee is bleeding."
I sigh deeply in satisfaction. "That's what happens when bunnies get fucked in the woods. I'm sure I'll be sore as hell tomorrow. Where are my clothes? I'm getting cold." He leaves me briefly to gather my shoes, shirt, jeans, and his jacket from where he tossed them to the ground earlier. Then he helps me dress in silent concentration, handling me gingerly as if he's convinced I might crack. His tenderness and concern are touching. He's being so sweet and gentle, the opposite of my dominant, snarling beast from only minutes ago. It's incredible how many different people one body can hold. We all walk around with 1,000 strangers inside us, slumbering quietly until someone else wakes them up. Like the jolt of electricity that reanimated Frankenstein's monster, all it takes for our sleeping giants to jump to life is a single spark. When I'm dressed, Aiden takes my hand and silently leads me out of the woods. When we emerge into sunlight, we look at the sky, then at each other. Something passes between us, unspoken and profound. He looks away first, squeezing my hand and smiling. That smile could break my heart. We spend the rest of the day at his apartment. I have to take another shower to get all the remnants of leaves and dirt off my skin. Afterward, Aiden puts Neosporin on my cuts and scrapes and bandages my knee. He looks unhappy as he does it, his brows drawn down, his lips pressed to a thin line. Though my injuries are minor and gained in the most wonderful way, he hates to see me hurt. I spend the night again. He wakes me at dawn and makes love to me with a wordless urgency that leaves me breathless. Then he withdraws into that quiet place inside his head where he goes when he needs to hide. But I don't ask him what's wrong. I don't push. I let him be. He's not the only one keeping secrets. By the time I get home, Fiona is already there. I find her in Michael's office, which sends a spike of irritation through me. What are you doing in here? Holding a feather duster, she whirls around from his desk and starts when she sees me. Kayla! Yes, it's me. I live here, remember? Her smile is apologetic. I'm sorry, dear. I didn't hear you come in. You walk like a cat. Uncomfortable, I hesitate at the threshold. I haven't been in this room since the accident. The door has been shut, and the air is stale. Something about it makes me feel claustrophobic. I didn't want this room cleaned. I thought I told you that. Did you? Didn't I? She laughs. Oh, well, if you did. I don't recall. Oh, sorry. To be honest, neither do I. Remembering what she said last week about the possible cause of my memory lapses, I grow even more uncomfortable. My cheeks heating, I shift my weight from foot to foot and clear my throat. But I'd like to leave this room alone for the time being. It's just, I gesture helplessly. I haven't gone through any of his things yet. She says gently, Oh dear, I completely understand. I'll start on the kitchen. Thanks. About that seance thing we talked about. Fiona brightens. Yes, I spoke with my sister. She says we should hold it on the next full moon, which is in 3 weeks. Oh, and she also said you shouldn't wear any perfume or jewelry. No other accessories either, especially cell phones. Apparently they annoy the spirits. She chuckles. Like the rest of us. My laugh is small and embarrassed. Actually, I think we should just forget about the whole thing. Fiona gazes at me for a moment, thoughtfully pulling at the feathers on the duster with her fingers. Oh? Her tone is mild, but it seems to require an explanation. I sheepishly provide one. I've decided I'm going to see a therapist. She raises her brows. How can a therapist help with your ghost problems? I exhale, shaking my head. Just the fact that I even considered the possibility that I'm being haunted strongly suggests the need for therapy. She looks as if she's about to protest, but must change her mind because she only nods. All right, if that's what you prefer. It is. Thanks, Fiona. She walks past me, avoiding my eyes. As her footsteps recede in the direction of the kitchen, I worry that I've insulted her. I turn to go after her, but something I glimpse on Michael's desk catches my eye and I turn back. A folded newspaper sits on the blotter next to where Fiona was dusting. From where I'm standing, I can't read the headline, but I can clearly see the photograph that accompanies the article. It's a picture of Michael. My pulse surges. My mouth goes dry. I feel a bit unsteady, as if the floor has tilted. For some strange reason, I'm suddenly afraid. I walk slowly across the room and stand beside the desk. I want to pick up the newspaper, but don't. I simply stand there and read the headline. Local man drowns. The paper has been folded over, so only the headline and Michael's picture are visible on the left side, along with part of the byline. I'm sure I haven't seen this article before. I'm sure I didn't put this newspaper on Michael's desk. What I'm not sure of is how it got here. Did Fiona bring it in? My mind starts to race. I try to think of rational explanations as to why she might place this newspaper in Michael's office, but can't come up with any. She'd know it would upset me to see this. I'd chalk it up to my memory lapses, but I know I haven't been in this office since the accident. A little voice in my head whispers, Maybe it wasn't Fiona. Covering my face with my hands, I recite silently, There are no such thing as ghosts. There are no such thing as ghosts. There are no such thing as ghosts. Something hits the office window with a sharp bang. I jump, letting out a little yelp, and stand with my heart palpitating and my shaking hands clutching my throat. Nothing moves. The air is still. Outside the windows, the sky is a glowering leaden gray. Gathering my courage, I go to the windows and look out, scanning the horizon. I see nothing unusual. The yard is empty. The rocky beach is clear. It isn't until I'm about to turn away that I discover the source of the sound. On the ground below the window lies the lifeless body of a blue jay. Its neck is bent at an unnatural angle. Its legs extend stiffly out from the trunk, talons curved like claws. Its black eyes stare sightlessly up at me. There's a ghostly outline of the bird's body on the window pane where it hit, wings outstretched in flight. Fighting the urge to scream, I turn and bolt from the room. I lock myself in the master bedroom. Then I pace, wringing my hands and chastising myself for being silly. Bird strikes are nothing new. I know they perceive the reflection of the sky on glass as being more sky, and that's why they fly right into windows and break their little necks. That doesn't mean anything. Only it feels as if it does. It feels sinister, like a bad omen, or maybe a message from beyond. I stop pacing and stand still in the middle of the room. With my heart beating like mad, I gaze up at the ceiling and whisper, "Michael." Nothing happens. The moment stretches out until my nerves are frayed with tension. When a door slams shut somewhere downstairs, I nearly faint in terror. I tell myself it's only Fiona, but don't quite believe it. That eerie feeling of being watched creeps over me again, but I'm alone in the room. Or am I? Suddenly, everything in the room looks sinister. The shadow behind the nightstand, the porcelain clown figurine on the bookshelf, a stuffed teddy bear in my reading chair who has, though I've never realized it before now, teeth that look weirdly human. Then there's the indentation in the duvet cover on the bed. That might be most creepy of all. As I do almost every morning, I made the bed when I rose, smoothing the covers and neatly arranging the army of small decorative pillows Michael scoffed at, but I adored. I like the bed to look tidy, as an unmade bed makes everything else look messy, so I'm somewhat anal about the habit. Sheets tucked in, pillows placed, covers perfectly smoothed. But now, there's a distinct indent on one side of the bed. It's the side closest to the door, the one I never sleep on. Michael's side. The indent is approximately the size and shape of a body. I exhale a ragged breath and give myself a pep talk. "Calm down, Kayla. You're losing it. There are no ghosts in the house." The doorbell rings. When I get my handbag from the dresser, dig my cell phone out, and look at the camera feed, no one is there. The front porch is empty. That's it. I fucking had it. I'm not about to let a stupid electrical problem drive me insane. I quickly scroll through my call log to find Eddie the handyman's number, then stand there hyperventilating until he picks up.
"Hello?"
"Hi, Eddie. It's Kayla. Remember me? With the leaky roof and the electrical problems?"
"Sure, I remember. Hey, Kayla. How are you, man?"
"I'm good, thanks. How are you?" His laugh is low and breathless.
"Groovy."
He sounds stoned. What a surprise. "That's nice. So, the reason I'm calling is because I wanted to get the number of your therapist."
"Oh, for sure. I just,
He's silent for a moment, then says,
"I don't actually remember it."
"Won't it be in your cell phone?" He sounds confused.
"Cell phone?"
"Yep, totally stoned. Either that, or I was right about him living in a commune with no modern conveniences. This number must be a landline." I sigh. "How about if you just give me his name?"
"Oh, yeah. Yeah, no problemo. His name's Letterman. Dr. David Letterman."
I frown. "Like the talk show host?" Another confused pause.
"Who?"
So he doesn't own a television either. At any rate, this conversation is going around in circles. Time to say goodbye. "David Letterman, got it. I'll give him a call. Is he in Seattle?"
"Nah, he's right down on Winslow and Olympic, right across from the Museum of Art. That little red brick building with the green awning."
I know the building well, so I thank Eddie and promise him again that I'll give his number to anyone who might need a handyman. Though I think he's probably far more skilled at dealing pot. When we hang up, I go downstairs to my office and Google the doctor on my laptop. There's no listing. Eddie was probably so high he gave me the wrong name. I consider calling him back, but decide it's a lost cause. Next, he'll likely give me the name of his dentist. Feeling defeated, I stare at the computer screen for a while. I know therapists in Seattle will be more expensive than ones on the island, and I don't love the idea of taking the ferry back and forth to the city once or twice a week. I could try to find someone in Bainbridge, but I know the pickings will be slim. Then I consider the possibility that maybe Dr. Letterman is the only shrink on the island. Or maybe he's not a shrink at all, but a voodoo doctor who'll want to sacrifice a chicken and read its entrails to see what's wrong with me. That seems a little more up Eddie's alley. Except David Letterman doesn't sound like a voodoo name. I'm starting to get exhausted from my little mental guessing game, so I decide I'll take a drive downtown later this afternoon after Fiona's gone and pop into Letterman's office. You can tell a lot by someone's office. If he's got a nice secretary and the place doesn't look like it's recently hosted any black magic ceremonies, I'll make an appointment. I've got dry cleaning to pick up anyway, and the cleaner's is only a block over. Hopefully my clothes are still there. I dropped them off before the accident. When a sharp pain stabs behind my left eyeball, I mutter an oath. Just what I need. A headache. I lie down on the sofa and close my eyes. I must drift off to sleep because when I open my eyes again, the light has changed. Shadows slink up the walls in long gray fingers. When I look at the clock, I'm surprised to discover I've been asleep for more than 4 hours. When I emerge from my office, the house is quiet. Fiona's gone. I go upstairs and change into a fresh shirt, then drive downtown and park on the tree-lined street outside the building Eddie said Letterman's office is in. As I'm getting out of the car, I happen to glance at the restaurant across the street. The Harbor House is a seafood place with a patio overlooking the water and live jazz on Friday nights. It's a popular spot for tourists and locals alike. Sometimes during the summer, there's even a line to get in. But it's not summer now, and there's no line. I've got a clear view of the restaurant's entry. Walking through the front door with his arms slung around a curvy brunette's shoulder is a man I'd recognize anywhere, even from the back. Aiden. 28. I freeze. My heart stops. Feeling as if I've been kicked in the gut, I lean against the car door to steady myself. Then I stand there in cold shock, trying to decide what to do. But there's nothing to do. Aiden and I aren't in a committed relationship. Hell, we haven't even talked about whether or not he's dating other people. I don't know a thing about his personal life. Oh, God, I say aloud, horrified. Kayla, you idiot. He could have 20 other women on a rotating fuck schedule for all I know, with nary a condom in sight. This is exactly how lifelong regrets are made. I quickly get back in the car and slam shut the door. Groaning, I lean forward and rest my forehead on the steering wheel. With my eyes closed, I curse myself silently, alternating every few moments with a nice juicy curse for Aiden, too. Not that he deserves it. No promises have been broken here. That awful pain in my chest is just my ego smarting. Or maybe it's my heart. I can't tell. Whatever it is, it's painful. Boy, I'd really like to swing a hammer at a few of his most tender body parts. When the sharp knock on the window comes, I jerk upright. Aiden is bent over outside the driver's side window, peering at me quizzically. Shit. When I don't make a move, he says,
"Thought that was you. What are you doing?"
Heat rising in my cheeks, I say quickly, "Nothing, sitting here." After a beat, he asks,
"This a bad time?"
I know what he means, and he isn't talking about my impending mental breakdown. I'm alone.
Okay. Back to the other question, which you answered, but not really. What are you doing?
I was just out running errands. He furrows his brow. His gaze grows piercing. I sigh and wish for the power of invisibility, which inconveniently doesn't materialize.
Get out of the car, Kayla.
I make a face at him. Do I have to?
Yes.
He steps back and folds his arms across his chest, waiting. I consider starting the engine and burning rubber, but decide against it. He'd probably run after me and catch me at the next stoplight. So I brace myself for an uncomfortable conversation and exit the car. He takes my arm and leads me safely over to the sidewalk, then stands across from me with his arms folded over his chest again. He doesn't say anything. He just stands there, silently looking me over. I say, "Okay, fine, I'll start. Hi, Aiden, how are you?" His eyes narrow. Other than that, he makes no response to my question. From experience, I know we could stand here all night before he tells me what's on his mind, if ever, so I point at the car and say, "I'm gonna go."
"Why are you acting so strange?"
"Me? I'm acting strange? He gets this look on his face, this annoyed look, like he's seriously considering taking me over his knee right here on the sidewalk and spanking my ass raw. A warning in his voice, he demands,
"What's wrong, Bunny?"
Hearing him call me that makes my blood boil. I sternly remind myself that this man doesn't belong to me, that we have no commitments, that all the hot, incredible sexual chemistry in the world does not a relationship make, but I can't quite get myself to believe it. I'm hurt, I'm angry, and I'm embarrassed that he caught me slumped over my steering wheel because I was so hurt and angry, but I'll be damned if I'm going to admit it. I might not have much, but I still have my pride. I lift my chin and say calmly, "Nothing's wrong. I was out running errands. It's nice to see you." His eyes flare with anger. His voice low and controlled, he says,
"Three fucking lies in one breath. Try again. At this time, be honest."
Heat pulses in my cheeks. I stare at him, aware that my hands are shaking and that I'd like to curl them around his neck and squeeze very hard. With every ounce of self-control at my disposal, I ask, "How's your date going, Aiden?" He blinks. He huffs out a short laugh. He glances over his shoulder toward the restaurant, then turns back and pins me in a look of such burning intensity, I take a step backward. Eyes shining, he says softly,
"Oh, Bunny, you're gonna pay for that later."
Then he takes my arm and leads me across the street. Ignoring my protests, he opens the restaurant door and guides me past the hostess stand and through the main dining room to a table near the back. A table where the brunette he walked in with is sitting, right next to his friend Jake, the security guy. I understand instantly that my tendency to assume the worst of human nature has just come around to bite me in the ass. Stopping tableside, Aiden gestures to the brunette.
"Deb, this is Kayla. Kayla, say hi to Deb."
He gives me a pointed stare.
"She's Jake's wife."
Face flaming, I say, "Of course she is. Hello, Deb. Nice to meet you." My face flames hotter when Deb bounces in her chair and claps in excitement.
"Kayla, we've heard all about you. It's so great to meet you. Come join us, please."
"Oh, no, I don't want to interrupt your dinner."
"Don't be silly. You're not interrupting at all. I can't wait to get to know you better."
As I stand there with Aiden's big hand curled around my upper arm and my mortification painting my entire face red, Jake smiles at me.
"Hi, Kayla."
"Jake.
How's the security system doing?"
"Great, thanks."
"Good to hear."
He glances at Aiden.
"You gonna sit, or is your man here gonna throw you over his shoulder and stalk off into the woods?"
"There's really no telling." Aiden puts me into a chair. He takes the one next to me. Then he props his elbows on the tabletop and stares at my profile with the intensity of an FBI interrogator.
"Aiden," says Deb, looking confused, "everything okay?"
He doesn't answer, but the tension in his body is enough to communicate volumes. Looking at Deb, I say sheepishly, "He's mad at me." Obviously surprised, she looks back and forth between us.
"Why? He was literally just telling us how amazing you are before he stepped outside to take a call."
This just keeps getting better. I want to slide under the table in shame, but manage to smile tightly and answer her. "I did something he didn't appreciate." She and Jake glance at each other in surprise, then look back at me with lifted brows. I feel like a world-class asshole. After a rough throat clearing, I admit,
"I saw him coming in here with his arm around your shoulders and assumed you were together."
She laughs.
"Us? Oh, honey, I've known this guy since high school. He's like a brother to me."
Jake slings his arm around the back of her chair and sends her a lazy smile.
"You've known me since high school, too. Feel like I'm your brother."
Smiling, she smacks him lightly on the thigh.
"Oh, be quiet. You know what I'm saying."
They share an affectionate kiss as Aiden continues to burn holes into the side of my face. Then he leans over and murmurs in my ear,
"You were jealous."
I turn my head. There's no mistaking the glint of heat in his eyes. It's right there, next to the disappointment. When I chew on the inside of my cheek, he chuckles and withdraws. The chuckle gives me hope that my punishment for breaking my promise never to lie to him won't be too severe. The waitress appears with a tray of waters for the table, then asks if we'd like drinks or appetizers before dinner. Deb says,
"God, yes. Give me a scotch and water, please. Easy on the water."
I can already tell I'm going to get along well with this woman. I ask for a glass of wine, and Jake and Aiden both order beers. When the waitress leaves to get our drinks, Deb leans over the table, smiling at me eagerly.
So, Kayla, I understand you're an artist.
An illustrator, actually. She crinkles her forehead.
They're not the same thing?
I suppose I'm a commercial artist, as opposed to a fine artist.
Meaning you make money,
says Jake with a chuckle. Not much, I answer ruefully, but it pays the bills. Deb says,
I'm so jealous, I don't have a creative bone in my body.
Jake snorts.
Don't know about that. You come up with some pretty creative stories every month when the credit card bill comes and you have to explain why you spent so much on Amazon.
She waves a hand dismissively in his direction.
I keep telling you, honey, everything I buy is absolutely essential.
Explain to me how 6 pairs of identical black leggings are essential.
She turns to him in outrage.
Would you prefer I go to Pilates class naked?
He smiles at her.
I'd prefer you do everything naked.
She turns back to me with pursed lips.
10 years of marriage and he's still the Energizer bunny.
I try not to choke on the sip of water I'm taking. Under the table, Aiden squeezes my thigh. I know he's smirking without turning to look. The waitress returns with our drinks and takes everyone's food orders. When she's gone, Jake, Deb, and I chat about nothing in particular while Aiden watches us silently. His hand still rests on my thigh, a warm reminder that I've got some groveling to get to later, and after that, when I'm alone, some serious self-reflection. I told Aiden that what I wanted was to get to know him better, to spend time with him and see where it goes. That was the truth, but was it the whole truth? Do I really want something more? If I'm honest with myself, yes. The thought of it scares me. I don't understand how I could possibly be ready to jump headfirst into a commitment so soon after Michael's death. What does that say about the kind of person I am? What does it say about my marriage? These are questions I don't really want to know the answers to. But in fairness to both Aiden and myself, they need to be asked.
Don't you think, Kayla?
I suddenly realize everyone is waiting for me to answer a question Deb has asked. But I've been so lost in my own thoughts, I don't know what it was. I glance around the table, my cheeks growing hot. Sorry, what was that? Deb hesitates. When she glances down at my left hand resting on the tablecloth, I realize I'm obsessively twisting my wedding ring around my finger with my thumb. I pull my hand under the table and swallow nervously, hoping Aiden didn't catch it, but knowing he probably did. And why the fuck am I still wearing the damn thing? What am I holding on to? More questions that require answers. Deb says gently,
I was just saying, we girls need to stick together.
It's obvious that's not what she was saying. She's being kind, letting me know that she can tell I'm a big mess, but that she's pulling for me. Jake, on the other hand, is giving me a steely stare. He's not cutting me any slack. He turns to Aiden and asks him how the house build is going, an obvious ploy to move the conversation in a different direction. They talk about the project while I sit and listen in uncomfortable silence, every once in a while offering a tight smile in response to a worried glance from Deb. This is a disaster. I'm a disaster. I can't even pull off a 10-minute conversation with other people without making a fool of myself. I've probably embarrassed poor Aiden in every way the man could be embarrassed, first assuming his best friend's wife is a fuck buddy, then toying with my wedding band and spacing out about my husband. I shouldn't be here. The moment that thought crosses my mind, Aiden drapes his arm over my shoulders and gives me a squeeze. Flooded with emotion, I swallow and look down, blinking rapidly to clear the water from my eyes. Deb says,
I've got to go to the little girl's room, Kayla. Want to join me?
The woman is a saint. I nod gratefully, then stand and follow her away from the table, feeling Aiden's gaze on my back as I go. As soon as we're inside the ladies' room and the door closes behind us, I lean against the sink, cover my face with my hands, and exhale hard. Deb rests a hand on my shoulder.
Don't beat yourself up about it. He understands.
I drop my hands and look at her helplessly. Understands what? That I'm a moron? Deb's brown eyes are as kind as the rest of her. She smiles gently at me and says,
Oh, honey, Aiden's been through hell, too. He knows the only way to get through it is to keep going until you reach the other side. You'll get there. You just have to trust the process.
She turns and locks herself into a stall. I stand staring at the closed door until the toilet flushes and she reemerges, As she stands at the sink to wash her hands, I say, "He really has told you all about me." She pulls a paper towel from the dispenser on the sink. Drying her hands, she nods.
"It isn't often Aiden likes someone, so you'll have to forgive me for getting excited. We haven't been on a double date with him in years."
She tosses the crinkled paper in the trash, then steps past me and pulls open the bathroom door.
"Come on, girlfriend. If we stay in here much longer, they'll start to worry and come looking for us. And trust me when I tell you that's not something we want to happen."
"The worrying part or the looking for us part?" She laughs.
"Both."
I smile, thinking I actually quite like it when Aiden comes looking for me. Hide and seek is my new favorite game because of him. When we approach the table, Aiden and Jake abruptly stop talking. Judging by their body language and the tension in the air, we interrupted an argument. Deb and I take our seats. Then there's a long, awkward silence where nobody says anything or looks at each other. When Jake scowls at my left hand, I have a feeling I know what the argument was about. He says aggressively,
"Can I ask you a question, Kayla?"
Aiden sends Jake a blistering glare and warns,
"Leave it alone."
"No, it's okay," I say. "Go ahead." He rests his forearms on the table and points at Aiden.
"This man doesn't deserve any bullshit,"
Aiden says through gritted teeth.
"Jake?"
I say, "I agree, he doesn't. What's your question?"
"What are you doing?"
"What do you mean?"
"I mean, what are you doing with him?"
He pauses to send a pointed stare to my ring finger.
"When you're obviously otherwise committed."
Infuriated, Aiden turns to me.
"Don't answer that."
He turns back to Jake.
"You're out of fucking line."
"He's just watching out for you," I say softly.
"I don't need watching out for."
As Aiden and Jake glare at each other, Deb rests her hand on Jake's forearm. She says gently,
"Honey, let it go."
Jake snaps.
"The hell I will. He's my best friend. I've watched him get shit on and beat up and kicked around by life for way too long. And he's finally in a good place after years of the worst this world has to offer."
He turns away from Deb and pins me in a cold stare.
"Then you came along."
He drops his gaze to my finger and stares accusingly at my wedding ring. Aiden hisses,
"For fuck's sake."
Mimicking Deb's gesture, I rest my hand on Aiden's tense forearm. My heart pounding, I look into Jake's angry eyes and say quietly, "You asked what I'm doing. Here's the answer. The best I can, like everyone else. I recently went through a huge transition. I'm not over it. I don't know how long it will take to get over it. But in the meantime, I'm living my life and figuring it out. I'm taking things one day at a time, just trying to sort through all the confusion, but I'm not otherwise committed. There's no one else." I turn to Aiden and gather my courage. "And today proved something to me. Seeing you with your arm around Deb, thinking you were with her, I swallow around the lump in my throat. I don't want there to be anyone else, for either of us. I'm in way deeper than I thought, and to be totally honest, it scares the shit out of me." The emotion reflected in Aiden's eyes is overwhelming. Deb and Jake disappear. The restaurant disappears. Everything around us fades to black. There's only me and Aiden sitting beside each other, looking at each other's bared souls. He says gruffly,
"Me too. All of it. Me too."
"I know," I whisper, tears filling my eyes. He takes my face in his hands.
"But you don't have to be scared. I'll catch you when you fall. I'll always catch you."
He tears me apart and glues me back together again, all with a kiss. Jake groans.
"Oh, well, fuck me. I guess now I'm the asshole."
Deb says,
"You'll make up for it by paying for everyone's dinner. Ah, and here's the waitress with the appetizers now. Perfect timing. Let's eat, guys."
When Aiden pulls away from me, I catch a glimpse of a familiar figure in the large rectangular mirror mounted on the wall behind our table. A tall, gaunt man in a gray trench coat with a hat pulled low over his eyes stands near the front door of the restaurant. Though I can't see his eyes, I feel him staring in my direction. By the time I turn around to look at him, he's gone. 29.
Kayla, you okay?
Aiden glances over his shoulder, following my gaze. I turn back quickly to the table and force a smile. I just thought I saw someone I knew. It isn't a lie. And it's not as if I'm going to sit here and admit the someone I thought I knew may or may not be a ghost, so I'll just keep this stupid smile on my face until my heartbeat returns to normal and I can stop the screaming inside my head. There are no such things as ghosts. There are no such things as ghosts. There are no such things as ghosts. Dear God, please let there be no such things as ghosts. We start on our appetizers. We share small talk. We order entrees and eat. I don't remember much of the rest of the dinner because my brain is preoccupied with trying to solve the puzzle of who the man in the trench coat is, if he's not an apparition from another dimension who's stalking me all over town. I really need to go see that shrink. When we're finished eating and we say our goodbyes to Deb and Jake, Aiden guides me out of the restaurant with his hand around my upper arm. When he steers me toward his truck parked in the lot outside, I say, I take it I'm not going home tonight.
You'll be lucky if I ever let you go home at all.
Oh boy. Sounds like I'm in big trouble. I guess that kiss at the table isn't going to make up for what happened earlier. I say nervously, I left my handbag in my car. He shoots me an intense look, his energy crackling.
Forget the handbag. You've got more important things to worry about.
I'm sure my gulp is audible. The drive to his apartment is tense and silent. I keep opening my mouth to say something, but closing it again, lost for words. It's dark by the time we arrive at his place, and it's starting to rain. He parks, kills the engine, and turns to me, eyes glittering. He says nothing, so I go first. I'm sorry I wasn't honest when you asked me what was wrong. He waits for more, his silence burning. I should have told you the truth, but I was hurt and angry and felt like a fool.
You promised me you wouldn't lie to me.
I whisper. I know. I'm sorry.
I believe that. But what happens next time? What happens if I ask you a question you don't want to answer? You gonna lie to me again?
Not trusting myself to speak because I'm getting emotional, I shake my head.
No. Really think about it before you answer. Do you feel you can't trust me?
I look out the windshield into the drizzle and swallow back tears. It's myself I don't trust. My head is all fucked up. I don't know what's wrong with me. All I know is that I want you. I want you more than anything. And I don't understand how that could have happened so fast.
He reaches across the seat and takes my hand. Giving it a firm squeeze, he murmurs,
Same. And I'm as scared as you are, Bunny. But I'm not gonna let it get in the way of enjoying every fucking second. You're the best thing that's ever happened to me.
God, he's killing me. I'm going to expire right here in the front seat of this truck. I cover my face with my hands. He drags me across the seat into his arms. Then we sit there in silence, broken only by the patter of the rain on the roof. After a long time, he says in a husky voice,
You ready to take your punishment?
A shudder runs through me. I whisper, Yes, sir. He kisses my temple, then whispers next to my ear,
Good girl.
What happens inside my body when I hear those words can't be normal. There's tingling, shivering, butterflies, the works. But all of that stops abruptly when Aiden releases me and starts the car again. Confused, I ask, What are you doing? His only response is to pull out of the parking lot and onto the street. Aiden?
I'm taking you back to your car.
What? Why?
You're going home.
I don't understand. Why am I going home? When he just keeps driving silently through the rain, I say miserably, Because that's my punishment. Gazing out the windshield, he says,
I told you I'd give you what you need, which might not be what you want. Right now, what you need is space.
My heart in my throat, I whisper, What I need is you. Wincing like he's in pain, he shakes his head.
I never want you to look back at this time and think we rushed things. I never want you to have regrets. Not about us. So we're going to slow it down to a crawl and take baby steps.
I think it's too late for baby steps. He glances at me. Even in the dim of the car, his gaze is so intense it burns like fire. When he turns back to look at the road and takes all that heat away, it leaves me freezing cold.
By the time we get back to the restaurant and he parks on the street behind my car, my teeth are chattering. Leaving the engine running, he reaches over and strokes a hand over my hair, then squeezes the back of my neck.
Go on,
he says softly. Why do I feel like I'm never going to see you again?
Because you're a drama queen. Now get your sweet ass out of my truck, Bunny. Call me when you've got clarity.
Clarity? Emotion makes my voice high and tight. What does that even mean? He leans over, takes my face in his hands, and stares right into my eyes.
When you're ready to take off that wedding ring, you'll have clarity. Until then, I'm not doing anything for you but muddying up the waters.
He presses a firm, close-mouthed kiss to my lips. When he withdraws, he takes my heart with him.
Now go,
he commands gruffly, staring out the windshield into the rain.
When you're ready, you know where to find me.
Fighting tears, my face hot and my heart throbbing, I say, I don't want to leave it like this.
I know.
I think we can work this out another way.
I don't.
Aiden, please.
Get out of the car, Kayla.
My lower lip trembles like a baby's. A cry of anguish is stuck in my chest, making it impossible to breathe. I stare at Aiden's profile, but he refuses to look at me. He just gazes out into the rain with one hand white-knuckling the steering wheel and a muscle jumping in his jaw. It takes all of my willpower to get my hand onto the door handle. What I really want to do is fling myself at him and hang on tight. But I know it won't get me anywhere. Once Aiden makes up his mind, there's no changing it. I open the door, climb out, and stand on the curb in the rain staring at him. He hangs his head and exhales hard. Not looking at me, he whispers hoarsely.
God damn it, Bunny. Just fucking do it.
I swing the door shut. It closes with a hollow clang. The truck pulls away from the curb and drives off, picking up speed until it races around a corner and disappears from sight. I turn my face to the sky, close my eyes, and let the rain slide over my cheeks to mingle with my tears. I don't sleep at all that night. I lie awake in bed, staring at the shadows playing on the ceiling and listening to the rain on the window panes, my head full of Aiden and my heart aching with his loss. I could call him, but he wouldn't answer. I could go to his apartment and pound on the door, but he wouldn't open up. I could write him a letter and beg and plead, but I know all I'd get in response would be silence. He's doing it for me, for us, but damn does it hurt. The strongest medicine always tastes the most bitter. I drag myself from bed in the morning and force myself to work. The hours pass so slowly they feel like years. By 3 o'clock, I'm in such a state. I quit work for the day and head over to the building where Dr. Letterman's practice is, determined to get an appointment. Halfway there, I spot a sign for a psychic. On impulse, I pull to the side of the road and stop. Readings by destiny, the neon pink sign declares. It beams out from a front window of a charming yellow cottage with white trim. Taped under the sign is a rough drawing of a crystal ball floating between two hands. Stenciled beneath are the words, "Today only, $10 special." Though I suspect the poster is in the window every day, I decide $10 is a small price to pay to have my fortune told by a woman named Destiny. If nothing else, it will be a fun story to tell. Walking up the stone pathway to the front door, I hear wind chimes and smell the sweet scent of burning incense. Feeling slightly foolish, I ring the bell. After a moment, the door opens to reveal a short old woman with a deeply creased face wearing a purple jogging suit with purple leather Air Jordans. Hi, I say, smiling nervously. I was just passing by and thought I'd get a reading. After looking left, then right, the woman shuts the door in my face. Taking that as a sign from the universe that I should abandon my ridiculous mission, I turn and start to walk away. But the door opens again, and a woman's voice calls out, "Hello there! Hello!" I turn to find a younger version of the first woman standing in the doorway. She's also short, but the hair piled atop her head in a complicated braided mound is black instead of white, and instead of a purple tracksuit, she's in a flowery teal and gold muumuu. Strings of colorful plastic Mardi Gras beads are draped around her neck. Gold bangles decorate both arms from wrists to elbows. Her lipstick is bright red, and the polish on her long acrylic nails is sparkly silver. Dotted through her coiffure are clusters of rhinestones that look like Christmas tree ornaments. It takes a significant amount of self-control to keep a straight face. She wiggles her fingers at me and smiles. In a syrupy southern drawl I suspect isn't authentic, she says,
"Come in, sugar."
"Are you open?" The other lady didn't seem very welcoming.
"Don't worry about Mama."
She waves her hand so her chunky rings catch the light.
"Blind as a bat, madder than a wet hand. I'll try to get to the door before she does, but the woman's as spry as a billy goat. Come in, come in."
There's got to be some kind of record for animal similes, but I decide her enthusiasm makes up for getting the door slammed in my face and accept the invitation. Slightly out of breath, she closes the door behind me, then hustles me into a parlor off the hallway, excitement oozing from her every pore. I get the feeling she doesn't get many customers on a Tuesday afternoon. Or maybe ever.
"Sit, honey," she instructs, pointing to a small round table draped in black velvet, flanked by a pair of tufted gold and maroon velvet chairs. On top of the table is a deck of cards and a crystal ball on a low silver pedestal. The room is decorated in what I suppose is standard fortune-teller decor. A red scarf is draped over the fringed shade of a floor lamp. A tall glass etagere displays an impressive collection of crystals. At the window, a pair of dusty gold brocade silk curtains held back with tassels lend the space a certain shabby glamour, as do the throw rugs on the wood floor that are worn in spots but still elegant. Several framed and incomprehensible astrological charts adorn the walls, along with a quote from Henry David Thoreau. It's not what you look at that matters. It's what you see. Next to the Thoreau quote hangs a vaguely disturbing portrait of Jesus with an open chest cavity exposing his bloody, thorn-encrusted heart. His eyes are turned beseechingly heavenward. I sit at the table, inhaling the heady scent of patchouli while looking around for any sign of my sanity. Good grief, what was I thinking? My hostess doesn't give me time to dwell on my regret. She plops herself down opposite me and announces, "I'm Destiny, sugar, and it is my great pleasure to meet you. Now, y'all tell me why you're here."
She waits expectantly as I try to formulate a non-crazy-sounding answer. "I'd like a psychic reading, I guess." She crinkles her nose.
"Oh, honey, you don't have to draw the pictures on the wall for me. I know you're here for a reading. My question is, why do you need a reading? Tell me what's going on in your life."
"Isn't it supposed to be your job to tell me what's going on?"
Yes, but I need a question for the tarot."
She points at the deck of cards on the table between us.
"You have to approach a reading with intention, you see. You can't just start pulling cards all willy-nilly. There's a process to this. We have to do it proper."
I sense condemnation in her tone, so I answer with what I hope is appropriate respect. "Of course. Well, I guess my question would be, what am I supposed to do?" Destiny flutters her false eyelashes accusingly at me.
"While I cleanse the cards, you can think about how to narrow that down to something more useful."
She proceeds to conduct an elaborate cleansing ritual on the cards, which includes first blowing on the deck, then setting various crystals on top of it while muttering unintelligible words. Once that's finished, she shuffles the deck, wraps the bottom edge against the tabletop three times to straighten it, then sets the deck in front of me with a theatrical flourish. Then she goes to the window and pulls the drapes closed, plunging the room into a murky semi-gloom.
"You have your question, sugar?"
"Yes."
"Ask the tarot."
I regard the deck of oversized cards warily, expecting to see an eyeball staring up at me from among the scrolls and twisting vines illustrated on the back. "How do I move on from my husband?" Destiny takes her seat again, nodding.
"Good. Cut the deck in half, then put it back together and fan the cards out in a half circle."
Her voice is hushed now. Her level of excitement seems to have risen. Even in the murk, I can see the drops of perspiration gathered on her upper lip. After I followed her instructions, she says,
"Now, pick three cards and place them in front of you from left to right, turning them over as they lie on the deck without flipping them upside down as you do.
I have to take a second to work that out in my head because my brain is a wet noodle. But I managed to complete the task to her satisfaction. At least, I think she's satisfied. She could also be having a heart attack. Her only visible reaction is widened eyes, but there's something chilling in her stare. The way she's gone from animated to frozen in the space of only a few seconds is unnerving. Following her gaze, I glance down at the cards I've drawn. The one on the left shows a person lying on the ground with a row of swords sticking out of his back. The one in the middle depicts a nude couple holding hands under a tree, but the card faces toward destiny, not me. The one on the right is the weirdest. It's an upside-down skeleton in full body armor riding a horse with a scythe in his bony hand, and boy, that is really fucking freaky and not at all helpful to my fragile state of mind. I look up at Destiny. So, what does it mean? Her voice hushed, she says. You have two major arcana cards, which in itself is significant. She points to the scary skeleton and the nude couple. The major arcana represent karmic influences and what's happening on the soul's journey toward enlightenment. These are important lessons you're being called to process. But when reversed, it means you're not paying enough attention. And here, both major arcana are reversed. This is a very complex draw. I'm already disliking the sound of this. Complex badge, you mean? Ignoring that, Destiny points to the card with the guy with all the swords in his back. The card on your left is your past. This is the Ten of Swords. Swords carry a powerful masculine energy that deals with the mind. As you've drawn it upright, it indicates crisis, loss, deep wounds, painful endings. She glances up at me. Betrayal. The skin on the back of my neck crawls. She points to the nude couple. This card in the middle is your present. You've drawn the lovers, which normally represents a balance of forces, complementary energies, trust in a relationship, harmony and strength. But here, it's reversed, which indicates disharmony and imbalance. Whatever's happening in your love life will cause you great pain. Wonderful. Just fucking wonderful. I can't even catch a break from a stupid deck of cards. Destiny points to the card on my right, the armored skeleton on horseback. This card represents your future. When she doesn't say more, I prompt impatiently, And? What does it signify? She says simply, Death. We stare at each other across the table as the clock ticks on the wall and my heartbeat goes haywire. Desperate for some kernel of positive news, I argue, But it's upside down. Wouldn't that mean life or something? When it's reversed, doesn't it mean the opposite? She shakes her head, making the ornaments in her hair quiver. Death is a very misunderstood card. It isn't just about life ending. It's about new beginnings, transformation, and change, metamorphosis from one state to another. When the death card is reversed, it means you're resistant change. There's been a major upheaval in your life, but you're not letting go of the past. And the longer you refuse to let go, the more painful your situation will become. You must purge yourself of old baggage before it weighs you down permanently. Purge myself of baggage? Like a psychic enema? Befuddled, I sit back in my chair and exhale. Destiny says gently, Sometimes it's helpful to draw a follow-up card to understand better what the death card wants you to let go of. I look at the fanned-out deck of cards and think I'd rather chop off one of my own fingers with a dull knife than hear more depressing news. Go ahead, she insists. It'll be good for you. I snort. Good for me like a root canal? Pick one, sugar. Oh, shit. Might as well get my $10 worth. Hesitating, I hold my hand over the deck, trying to get some